Welcome, everybody, to Capes and Scowls West.
West, West, West.
Issue number 11.5. Wow, we grow up really fast here, don't we?
Well, we do, but it's in, like, you know, half increments.
Yeah, fair enough. So I guess, you know, we're going to be 100 by the time most listeners are 50. Or
yeah.
The other way around.
No.
Are we going to be 25?
We'll be 25.
Okay. Party age.
Yeah, nice. So while we stay here and never age ever because we are mortal and you only know our voices, you will be out there slowly feeling the passage of time. Unfortunately, also feeling the passage of time is Leander, who has prematurely aged into oblivion and is currently sitting here as a skeleton with dust slowly getting coming off of him.
I told you guys to dust him.
I know, right?
Well, his opinion was to not be dusted, and I want to make sure that we follow by his opinion.
Oh, okay.
So that's
fair enough.
Yeah. Respectable.
Right.
Yeah, respect. He did specifically say that we should not dust his skeleton.
Yeah.
No, unfortunately, Leander can't be here because, as we mentioned in the last episode, he has moved to Denver now. He will be back up for shows. Just not this one currently, so, we have implemented in his place a skeleton.
Yeah,
that we
exactly.
Have put dust on. So if you can see it, it's pretty crazy. We got it from, the college's lab, and,
Yeah. We got all of the dust from, outside the college too, just to make sure that it was, like, authentic.
I thought we were supposed to go to the library. I went to the
wrong
place.
Oh, no, I got it from the crematorium. Actually, it's
this is getting
real
dark, guys. This is, yeah.
I mean, and technically, as we're recording right now, it is October 1st, so.
Oh! Spooky.
In all reality, we're going down the right path.
One. Sorry.
I love October. Halloween is easily my favorite holiday.
I love Halloween as well, yeah.
I love Halloween so much. That's the only time I get to dress up as Squall Girl and nobody will mention anything about the fact that I'm dressed up as a girl or a furry.
I mean, I can't say that I love Halloween. You guys wait. November 1st. I'm going to be walking around in a Christmas hat.
Oh my gosh.
Oh, shit.
You're one of them.
I am one of them. I'll admit it, but it's a cool hat.
I thought you, for a minute there, I thought you were going to say walking around in a mustache, because it's mustache in November. Or
Movember?
No, no shave November,
yeah.
That's what it
really
is.
I really do that, yeah. I'll grow it out, guys, don't worry, I got you.
Yeah.
Oh, I might do like a crazy beard for no shave November, now that I have the top knot, do something like really like bushy.
Oh, yeah? I think you should go straight Salvador Dali.
Just straight out?
Like mustache
you know,
just out
though,
for 3 feet
wide.
You
know, how much I love like, Halloween and anime and cosplay like stuff like that. I would love Halloween, but no, yeah. It's Christmas.
That's kind of what I assumed, and I'm sorry for, you know, making assumptions about your personality and character.
I mean,
character,
I'm pretty stoked, because I'm pretty sure I'm going to walk in here one of these days, because I have to work Halloween, because yay me.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure that I'm going to walk in here one of these days in one of the little, like, costume t-shirts with a cape and, like, a little mask. So, sorry, guys.
Oh, it's all good. We should have a Halloween party at some point in time at Griffin because it'll be the anniversary party as well. So,
oh, really?
It's a yearly event.
What time? Or what
I don't know. I don't know the date yet. Checking calendars. We haven't had a meeting in October yet, so.
I may have to find that out then because I may take that day off.
Yeah, it was super fun last year. We had Nick's band. Muscular House Cat was here, and yeah, we did a costume contest. We played werewolf with 25 people. It was insane. I'd never played werewolf before, but being
how
able
long
to play,
did that last?
That was in and of itself about an hour long game.
Oh, okay, that's not as bad as I thought. Then
it was awesome because you have so many people, and people were making noises during like the night sequencing.
Yeah,
and there was like animal sounds being made, and like it was really fun.
Yeah,
something to look forward to.
Yeah, well, you'll definitely have to let me know as soon as possible.
Cool.
So I can come because actually going to be out of town because my dad's getting married.
Oh, nice!
Ooh, shout out to dad. Definitely,
congrats.
You know, after all these years, whatever. Cool. So, without further ado, we should probably get into comic reviews. Since we all have at least a bunch.
Yeah, at least a bunch.
Yeah, at the very minimum.
One of us has a pinch, but most have the bunch.
So yeah. Mm-hmm. At the very minimum, a bunch. Slightly lower than the very minimum is a pinch, for sure. Some of us have a few. So...
what is wrong with us? All right. Well, we're going to start out with a group review, actually. We're going to talk about Nightwing, The New Order, number 2. This is written by Kyle Higgins with art by Trevor McCarthy. Same team behind Batman Gates of Gotham. Kyle Higgins has written Nightwing for a number of years. He was part of the New 52 run of Nightwing. He brought Nightwing into the Batman Beyond universe. Yeah, just a lot of experience with the character. So it's a little setup. We've talked about this book before, but it is a future story. It's not an Elseworld because DC has gotten rid of that, but it's essentially the same idea that it's not in continuity. And at some point in the near future, in the near DC future, it is decided that superheroes and superpowered beings are causing more damage than they're helping, and Nightwing ends it. He wipes out the powers of, what, it's 90% of Earth's 90%, superpowered beings? And in page 4 or 5, you get revealed that Nightwing's son, Jake, is actually... his mother is Starfire, so, like, no...
So he's Tamaranian.
Yeah, so he's half human, half Tamaranian. And, yeah, so...
Let's talk about Metropolis for a minute here, though. We were talking about that with the first issue of Nightwing New Order, how all of us were very curious to see what was Metropolis, because it's mentioned very much so.
It was in the first thing. It was always made to be that tipping point, and it kind of led you, and it's like, wait, what was the tipping point? What was the tipping point?
Yeah, and I think, and I feel like all of us are expecting something slightly different, slightly crazier, but I personally think that it is insane how typical this was for it's just a superhero battle.
Yeah.
You know, it's basically the Justice League versus...
Which means, like, the Injustice Society.
Which I'm
pretty sure that means there's some other tipping point. Because it looks like, from just reading it, though, looking at it... He had this prepared before all of this.
Oh, yeah.
But it looks
he
like
had this. He definitely had this prepared, but... This being the tipping point, it's like, how many of these wars have we seen in comic books before?
Where the buildings are
collapsing and, you know, there's explosions from Superman punching.
Not everybody can be Goku, I'm sorry.
Right.
You know, exactly. And the fact that, like, thousands of people are dying...
Well, we're seeing it in the book. I think what Nightwing represents in this is a reflection of the common man, being that Nightwing doesn't have superpowers. But we actually see people start rioting or not rioting, picketing and like protesting the use of superpowers. They actually start putting up signs, you know, no more powers. Powers don't kill people. It's nothing super about murder.
Well, of course, on the other half of it too, they have the other ones where it's like, save us, we need you.
Right.
Yeah.
So it's this whole, the buildup of what is society's response, and then Nightwing taking it into his own hands to say, okay, you know what, I'm with society, something else, something needs to be done bigger than what my predecessors were doing. And I think that's an interesting thing, is the generational aspect of the story, because you have Nightwing, who's kind of the second generation superhero and the representative of the second generation superheroes, as well as the communal point. He's so connected to so many people in the DCU. I also want to tell the listeners right now, we're talking about the first 5 to 10 pages of this book.
Yeah, this is
how solid, no spoilers, I think we all really love this. It's literally the first couple of pages just shoots you right into, we're not going to hide what this story is. We're going to tell you the things you want to know. And
It's not dragging by any means.
Oh, most definitely.
And it's from the perspective of Jake. We're hearing, like, the story is being told of, yeah, of Nightwing's son, of Dick Grayson's son, about what was the turning point in their lives. And this was the beginning and the turning point that led up to the turning points.
Well, I think something that this book highlights that I personally love philosophically is that most of our modern day actions are simply over-exaggerated reactions to something that's happened.
Mm-hmm.
You can look in that and, you know, politics, economics,
I think it's everything. It's even in normal life, to be honest.
In normal life. Like,
I feel like
half
Facebook
the
and everything like that has pretty much showed you that.
Yeah, like, half the reason I do stuff is just to spite other people. But, and this book shows that in heavy, heavy precision, where you have the reaction to superpowers to be, to do something that is, at least to the reader at this point, and to a couple of the characters, very much an overreaction to this.
Yeah.
Like, at least to his son and to Alfred, definitely.
Right. We don't know Batman's perspective, right? Like, that's
we haven't seen Batman
in the story. And yeah, looking at the pages right now, he's not in the Justice League fight.
I thought in the first one mentioned that he was not. I think something happened to him, and, like, he's not
okay. He is
there.
In the Justice League fight.
Yeah, he is. He is in the fight, but we haven't seen what happened to him. We haven't gotten any panels with him yet.
Yeah.
Except in this one flashback, we haven't. Or I guess in the
we haven't really.
Yeah, two pages.
Any of the first generation ones he hasn't even bumped into though.
Right. Well, the question that I have is, where did he get the device? Like, who worked with him? Nightwing is an incredibly intelligent guy, but he's more of an active sort. Like,
yeah.
It makes sense for him to use
the
device, but where did it come from?
There's the three Robins. You have the one who's great at fighting and great at his acrobats, and you have, you know, crazy one. And then the third one is the detective.
Right.
He was never the big detective. He was always, like, he's smart, but he's not.
Right. He's smart, but he's incredibly intelligent in combat. Like,
mm-hmm.
that's, he's probably more of a tactician like Batman is.
Yeah.
And less of, like, a technological expert.
Mm-hmm.
Honestly, I don't think it's necessary to know for the story. It's basically a MacGuffin.
But at the same time,
it would be cool to know who made it.
Well, it could be a potential tie to future story elements. Like, what if it's Luthor that helps him?
Well, the other part of this too is
Bruce,
you also have to.
But Lex Luthor was in the fight himself,
but he doesn't have powers, so he may have said,
"This
fight is going to occur. I need you to be here. This is the device."
That is true.
That's the thing, though. Is like, we're number one. We're only on issue number two. So there's that, and there's the fact that at the end of the day, like, it sounds like he betrayed them, he betrayed his family with this, like.
So I have a quick question for the both of you, and this is something I noticed, and I'm not a crazy DC person, even though I do love a lot of their stuff, obviously, Nightwing. New World Order, definitely amazing.
Right.
But the flags on about a little less than halfway through, he's standing there shaking what I assume to be the president's hand with his Nightwing symbol behind it in the flashbacks before it pops back into the panel before it pops back into present times.
Yeah.
The American flag is different.
What do you mean?
It has horizontal lines as well as vertical lines.
I think that's actually it's an artist's take on the folds.
Mm-hmm.
It's really just it's a rendering of when a flag is sort of not at.
It's not it.
Yeah.
Oh, I see.
So
I see that. No,
the flag
so
is just at
just
rest and it's mm-hmm. falling down, so it has that appearance to be rolled almost like a.
Oh, okay.
Shape.
I see that, so, but. I was just really, like, intrigued by that for something, because we talked about, like,
well,
the totalitarianism and, like, fascism.
Well, yeah, that was
the first
issue, though. Like, even this cover of this issue, it's the same thing. It's him going on, it looks like, you know,
mm-hmm.
funny enough, if you look at the back of his shirt, it's a Nightwing shirt, and he's got his superpowers.
Right,
and then
Jake.
You, And it's definitely Jake, and he's taking on the police force.
Stormtroopers, yeah. Basically.
Which, what a great image, just in general. We're really gonna, we're going pretty deep in this, but what a great image on the cover that the totalitarian force is the image of Batman with Nightwing symbol on its face.
Yes.
It's like, there's such a clean, and where did those come from, too? Like, where are the bat imagery.
I feel like
there's a lot of unanswered questions, and we're not even in the meat of the book yet.
We haven't gotten out of the flashback. It's like, what is it?
We're all just stuck on that.
One, two, three, four, five,
is it's like, where is everybody? Because he said 90%, and the ones
there's a 10%
who can't take those inhibitor drugs, who doesn't, like, as they said, don't work for them.
I think it's
stasis, so where the heck are they?
So he took away the superpowers of 90% of the people.
Mm-hmm.
The other 10%, I assume the majority of them are actually on inhibitors. And then there's a smaller percentage of that the powered inhibitors don't work. At least that's what I personally took away from it.
Well, and that's interesting because I took away that the 90% flat went powerless.
Yes.
In that moment.
Yeah.
And it was kind of a long, slow burn for them to get powers back. And in that interim time, they came up with the inhibitors so that anybody who was hit was forced to take the inhibitors.
With Superman, though, his powers come from the sun. How do you inhibit that besides not letting him have sun?
It has to be something to do with, like, how his cells process.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's the thing, is his cells process something.
But also, they mention in the comic that most of the people who are not able to be put on power stabilizers, mm-hmm. per se, are put into a kind of stasis. Does this mean that, because we don't actually see Superman die, even though he's, like, punched full of holes, but, you know, we've seen this before in the comics.
I mean, I just remember that's why I said, like, at the end of the day, Nightwing has betrayed them. Looking at Superman, our Boy Scout of DC, who does everything he can well-intentioned enough, is laying with Rod through him. You betrayed us.
Yeah.
Like.
Yeah, that's a weird thing. Oh, so we'll move into the what is not present time either in the story, but the main meat of the story, which was the more recent past. And Jake has revealed his powers, and he's in Holt Laboratories. To anybody who didn't pick up on this while reading the book, Michael Holt is Mr. Terrific.
You're dealing with
an older Mr. Terrific who's studying Jake, and they're trying to come up with a way to suppress his powers, and, well, they can't. He is one of these who is immune to the suppression.
Mm-hmm.
So Nightwing, who is the leader of this force that is supposed to go against the superpowered beings, and who, you know, was the catalyst for all of this happening, has a son that has powers that he can't inhibit. And
that whole conversation in the car, too, that was like every single, I feel like at one point every single, like, parent and child has had a conversation similar to this.
Right.
I mean, why didn't you tell me?
Because I didn't want you to,
like,
be.
From that perspective, too, it's like, I've dealt with stuff like that. Well, like, when I was, you know, when I finally am like, I'm gay, blah, blah. And it's like, well, why didn't you tell me? Well, I didn't think you would like it. And that's, like, exactly what it is. And that's, like, when I read that, I had, like, a flashback moment to that. And I was like, yeah.
Talk about applicability, too. Yeah. Like, it's such a great and simple thing in the story is applicable to your own life experience. You know, like, what was that thing? You know, is it a larger group, like Kat said, you know, the gay community? Or is it, you know, just that one moment where you did something really stupid and you had this conversation? It's like, there's an applicability to everybody as you're reading the story that you've been in that seat going, but I didn't want to tell you, you know, like,
I thought
you were going to think badly of me. Exactly. It was like that normal, I don't want my parents to be disappointed in me moment.
That normal part where you feel incredibly disappointed about your actions and that you can't live up to the standards that your parents set and you don't want them to be sad of you. And we just described basically every person ever at one point.
Right? Exactly. And once again, another reason I absolutely love this book.
Right.
So
to get into slight spoilers,
I think we can't talk about this book without spoiling stuff. Okay. So we'll just put it in the notes.
So Alfred is an incredible jumping off point for Dick Grayson and his ideas. They have a great conversation off each other. And Alfred is, so in the end of this book, or this issue,
I mean, I just like to point out that kind of parent thing, too, is they have a fundamental disagreement about how things should be going, but they still talk to each other like human beings, and they still love each other.
Yeah, the same way with Dick and Alfred. Mm-hmm. Like, even though they fundamentally disagree about what Nightwing did in Metropolis at the time, Alfred is like, you know, did you really fully consider the implications of your action? And he's like, yes, you know, right. I totally did this. And Alfred's like, but, like, really?
Yeah.
So the Nightwing's...
Well, I want to talk really quick about that relationship. Just as a Batman fan, this was really... I love the fact that it cements Alfred as the father figure and Dick Grayson as the younger brother. You know, like, it's... Because I think oftentimes the relationship, people assume that Batman is, like, the dad to Dick Grayson. And in that scenario, it's more like an older brother-younger brother relationship. It's like he's somebody he takes under his wing because their parents aren't gone. Are not here, you know, like they both have that same similarity, and Alfred is the father figure really to the both of them, and they have conflicting views, you know, Dick and Batman aren't always on the same page, and it's like that's I like this cements that one step further, you know, because Bruce isn't there, and it's really the father-son relationship with Alfred and Dick Grayson. Just kind of a fan moment for me, like something I really enjoy reading.
Yeah, no, that's definitely very interesting, because they do have the Bat family, basically. Mm-hmm. Like, that's how it is. Like, anybody who saw the Lego Batman movie knows how much, you know, Batman needs a family.
Gosh. To cement him. So funny.
And so, in the end of this book, basically, Nightwing's secret police, I don't really know what to call them, the Gestapo, maybe?
That's a solid name.
Basically break into their house to take Jake away, his son, and there's an amazing scene here where Alfred goes up against the secret police with, like, you know, his classic baseball bat style, like, I'm gonna defend this house with whatever's on hand. And he gets shot in the chest by one of the police members, who Dick knows. He calls him by name, even though we don't see him before. And this, personally, for me, hit home so close. The first ever instance I heard about police brutality was this older woman in my neighborhood getting shot and killed by the police, who was just standing in the street off her meds holding a kitchen knife. And so this scene right here, just so many levels of amazing, and how just true it is. Because, you know, honestly, how much damage could Alfred really do with a baseball bat going up against literally a dozen, like, trained special ops?
Not even,
like, from, you know, the normal, like, political stance with this. You still have to think, like, this is how much this means to them. Like, this is how far they're going make sure that, that they take that... take him is like, if you're gonna stand in a way, then we're just gonna blow you apart, is basically like, this is a,
well, just to further their agenda.
Well, and there's an interesting line on the page before the that specific, and it says tell him to drop the bat, and I take that as this is the moment that the ideology of Batman dies and we're into something completely different.
Yeah, because Alfred has always been this stabilizing force in Dick Grayson and Batman's life and all the subsequent Robins.
Right.
And all this stuff. So that is very interesting. I did not notice that entendre there.
Well, and it's so true, because what Nightwing did is not very in line with what you'd think of Batman's ideology, because it created a higher level of violence. And in this situation, we're seeing a higher level of violence.
Well, it's not even that. The thing that kind of even bothered me a little bit, too, is, like, it's a, like, he says, like, not, like, right after that, he's like, Brady, put down the gun. Alfred, it's okay. We'll go in quiet. Just stand down. And it's like, when does anybody ever, like, even that mentality, when has Batman ever stood down from anything?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly. And then, of course, that's when, that's the moment in time where Alfred takes it up and he's like, I'm sorry, I can't do that. It's like, this is well, from just, people standing down. And this is what happened.
It just shows, like, it's the beginning of the cycle of violence and escalation, you know, like, a violent action is responded to with another violent action, and this is just, even though it seems like Nightwing is trying to be nonviolent by taking away the superpowers of everybody and thus saving the lives, that still is a violent action, and we just see this sort of spiraling under control here.
Oh, definitely.
Definitely.
there's no sorts.
So the one question that I have to everybody is, does it still feel like Nightwing after issue 2? Like, does it still feel like Dick Grayson is the character that we know?
I don't know much about Nightwing, but I feel like that is unnecessary for the story.
That it is unnecessary for it to feel like him?
Yes.
Well, from my perspective, it does feel like Nightwing with all of the intentions of being the part of the group and making the decisions that are best for everybody. But it's what happens when you get older and those decisions change you in a way that...
Well, it's not even... I mean, even just, like, from a basic standpoint, is he's always different from Batman, and he's always been different from Batman. And it's like Batman would never make this decision unless pushed by something. So it's like...
Right. Like, well, even in this, like, he has some sense of optimism that's, oh, no, you know, you're my son. We'll find a way for this to work out. And it's like... He's still not being realistic. No. He's still trying to be the optimistic Nightwing. And it's funny because I feel like he's Nightwing, but I'm not. I'm starting to not necessarily like him as the story goes on.
I'm pretty solidly. Like,
wait, you don't
honestly...
like? Wait, so just to be clear here, you don't like the guy who basically installed a fascist regime into the world?
But I like Nightwing.
I can honestly say, okay, like, I just wanted to ask. From issue one, I looked at him and I'm like, you were. I want to point out, like in the back of my head, because, like, you know, normal thought process with this kind of stuff, I'm like, you are literally being pissed off at a bunch of people for something they can't control who are trying to do something good with it.
Yeah.
And that's when I was like, I already don't like you.
throwing out the baby with the bathwater?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Like, you're attacking people who can't control things. Like, what are you going to do? I'm going to take away their superpowers and put them in a stasis prison if I don't like what I see. And I'm just, like, having, like... Yeah. And I've been watching, like, a certain show. So, like, seeing all of this stuff just makes me think, like, just on any fundamental level, whether any diversity...
Is it the show of our political prison system? Because that's also a show that...
It's mostly just me thinking about the fact that it's like, basically, like, if you have some sort of difference with you and someone's judged you for it, and they're basically throwing you out for it, you can relate to it.
Yeah. Okay, well, that was nice. Right. That was heady. Obviously, we all loved that book, but we're going to have to rip through some reviews here.
Yeah, definitely.
Who wants to get started? I got a shorter list, so I'll let you guys.
I've got, like, not many.
I want to try to do a I want to do a Leander, like, 5 in 2 minutes
all right.
kind of thing here. So I got 3 generations of generations. Miss Marvel and Miss Marvel... Amazing, great, pick it up. It actually gets into what Leander hates about these books, which is time travel. Miss Marvel mentions that she hates time travel as a motif in things. Great. Generations, the Spiders, Miles Morales and Peter Parker, pretty good. You know, pick it up if you like the characters. It's trying to get into some heavy stuff, but kind of dropped short, didn't time the webbing correctly or something like that. I got Captain America and Captain America, Sam Wilson, Steve Rogers. Really good. Actually gets into why all these people travel back in time, do these things. And as I do enjoy in a lot of Sam Wilson books, it definitely gets hard into race things, not just as an allegory, but actually, so I gotta talk about this one for a hot minute though. Sam Wilson, as opposed to all the other ones, he goes back in time to World War II and basically lives his entire life, in this time travel thing, and then is taken back. He joins the army, he becomes a preacher, he has a wife. He has his whole life and decides that he does not want to be Captain America anymore, which is leading up into Legacy and subsequently his solo issue. Wow. At the end of this issue, he throws the shield back to Captain America. He's like, I could just send it to him, but I want to make a bigger statement. Throws it at Steve Rogers, and so it's, I'm really interested to see where Falcon's storyline is going. Speaking of things I'm interested to see where they're going, I can't talk right now. Samurai Jack, Quantum Jack, great. Fun read, yeah. Not so much of a actual plotline going on right now. Mm-hmm. Really interested to see where it's going. Samurai Jack Season 5 was one of my favorite things ever. And other things where I'm interested to see where they're going, Moon Girl and Devil Dinosaur. Moon Girl sends Devil Dinosaur back to the past, and they're getting, and they're really building up to, I think, the Fantastic Three or Fantastic Five or
Fantastic Three and Fantastic Four.
Yeah, or like however many Fantastics there's going to be now, because she's looking for a new partner, who is potentially a or multiple Fantastics. Alright, that's my fail at doing a 5 and 2 minutes.
Not bad, actually.
Actually, we're okay. Almost at three, yeah. But you just...
Yeah.
You're just like, oh, no. But boy.
You probably said you were going to go a little longer on one of them. Mm-hmm.
Right? Yeah, I did say I was going to...
It was almost a minute.
Alright, so who's next?
I'm definitely not that great at what he just did, but I definitely want to talk about Batwoman. So Batwoman number 7, I also don't have, like, nearly as many as you do either, so Batwoman number 7, like, the opening page, I was like, what? And, I mean, I of course love this art, whoever does the, let's talk about our art. I think it's...
Blanco.
Yeah, Blanco, I don't know. Let's see, let's find the opening. Oh, of course
DC
not.
Does their openings in the back.
That of course it
Oh, it's That's story right. specific.
Yeah, it is. That's right. It's literally called Trippin' Bats, and I'm just like, yes.
Trippin' Bats, I love that.
So we've got Marguerite Bennett, which I think she writes something else that I'm going to review too.
Fernando Blanco on art.
Fernando Blanco.
So
I like the name. Sorry.
Yeah, so the art is just like awesome. I definitely enjoy the art. Hands down, like you find she wait like the first page you open it up and she's like torn up in the middle of a desert and she's just like what like it's really awesome. So you know you get into it and you see what actually happens to her, and of course from earlier issues she's trying to hunt down she's trying to hunt down like weapons. And she leads her to the Itamali in the Sahara Desert. And so she's in there, and she gets attacked, and this is just honestly kind of a decent issue for the fact that it's just Batwoman instead of the last 6 issues where she's been fighting somebody else, but it's not as much, it's about her, but it's about her and another person, which... Half the time I could care less about her and another person because I don't really care about your exes very much,
right.
Kind of deal. And so, you know, you just get into it and this is just her, like, in the middle of the desert, kind of losing it because, I mean, okay, the cover even tells you, she runs into the Scarecrow. So she's
tripping bats.
Yep, exactly. And, you know, we get to this point where she's like, I'm in the middle of the desert, and she talks about, you know, when you get sunburnt in the desert, it's not a burn, it's radiation from the UV lights. And she's like, and so you get this thing called sun poisoning, and she's like thinking about this all in her head as she's going, and she's like, it's awful.
That's awesome.
That's why I've always loved her, because she's just like, you know, this sucks. she doesn't go into some big rant about it. It just sucks. And so at the very end of the comic, like, the art style gets trippy and weird, and I thought for a minute I was on drugs. And I mean, I'm hoping that after reading this one, this is how this continues to go, because, like, at the very end, you finally see it's like, it, you know, he introduced, you know, you see Dr. Crane. He's like, I am the Scarecrow. So I'm really,
I'm hoping. It is natural style.
Yeah. And it, yeah, seriously. So I'm hoping that this sticks with this, like, not necessarily trippy, because I'm not sure I could handle another four of these, like, psychedelic drug looking things, but I'm definitely excited to see where this goes, because I don't think that woman's ever taken on Scarecrow, has she?
I don't think so. Not directly. At least yeah. So
I'm hoping that you get to see, like, a bit more vulnerable side to her, since she's always so...
put
together. I could take you all on, so...
Nice.
All right, next turn.
All right, well, I will jump into Angelic from Image Comics. This is written by Simon Spurrier with art by Kaspar Wingard. I'm going to say it that way because the last name is very difficultly spelling things. Yeah. So words. I apologize if I'm not pronouncing your last name incorrectly. I'm just going to read the back promo thing to give you an idea of what the story is. Centuries after humanity has disappeared, the Earth belongs to our leftovers. The animals, genetically modified for war they don't remember, guarding a world they don't understand. But for one young winged monkey, the tribal routines are unbearable. Her name is Cora. She yearns to explore, to learn, and to fly free. So this is the centers on Cora. She's one of the monks. They refer to themselves as monks, not monkeys. I think that's actually an important story point, because they have an entire religious society. And this book was a true world building. The monks have special powers with sonics. They can fly. Dolphins are mechanized, bloodthirsty flying beasts that live in the water and the skies. They are insane. I want to read, like, the way that they talk is amazing. So this is a dolphin as it's running through a flying monkey. Sport. Just the happiest can be. Yeah.
From my understanding, though, dolphins are, like, literally sociopaths in water.
Well, and they are sociopaths in this, for sure.
Yeah. Basically, they're one of the few animals that rapes.
Mm-hmm.
They're crazy. This whole book is really about going against the societal norms and moving on to do something different. And it's telling us about the world. There's a giant mechanical cat that, like, wants to eat the monks. There's the mans, which I think the book is trying to maybe say is humanity, but we're feeling like humanity left. I don't want to spoil too much, because this is definitely, like, for an issue one, this is an easy pickup. Just get it, read it, enjoy the beautiful art. It's very cartoony and, like,
I have to ask.
Yeah.
Being cat. Are they cats?
Yeah. Oh, you guys see the cat's amazing. It has some sort of, like, digital camo is what it looks like. It's, like, oversized.
Oh, like active camouflage.
Yeah. Yeah.
Huh.
It's super, and, like,
cat,
literal.
Look at the cat.
Yeah.
Really, really cool. I am 110% on board. This was such, like, big world building, and that's really what this issue one was about. Hmm. But you have fun with it. It takes a little bit of reading. You want to read it out loud. Right. I know that sounds really weird, but the language is so strange, like the way that the characters talk. Read it out loud, and, like, the tempo feels right. It's a really, really cool and fun read. Yeah, definitely check out Angelic. I can't say much more than that. Find issue one, add the rest of the series to your polls, because this is going to be a fun ride.
Huh. Interesting. Yeah. Yeah, definitely looks like a good one.
It's fun. Super, super. It reminds me a lot of, like, the same style as, like, Legend of Korra and Avatar.
Okay.
Like, it has that sort of, it's cartoony.
Mm-hmm. Like the art style, or just
well,
the
art style and
general.
The tone, like everything is like it's cartoony, and it feels like it's also for adults. Like you okay. get into it, and you get into the world building. Like there's definitely a sense of things that came before, which I always love because it makes things feel really rich. So
interesting, yeah, definitely have to check that out. So for me then, I got the Bitch Planet triple feature. I'm loving the Bitch Planet triple features. They are amazing short comic stories. I want to just briefly describe the first one and the last one to get into the middle one, which is fucked. Absolutely fucked.
Name something about that series though that is like, I've read issue one and I'm like, I don't like stand like as know, a female, I'm not sure if I can personally continue to read this. Like,
I know.
It's just not
some, so yeah. Like the first story in the triple feature, which is three short stories, as the name would imply, is a sports ball star who is sporting very well in his career. And there's, you know, just a very slight mention of how he is being extremely sexual assaulty and harassment-y to his spouse slash significant other. You know, of course, why would you need to go on and on about that? There's no reason. It's sports. Just watch the game. And then it kind of starts where it, or stops where it begins, thus continuing the cycle. The end is kind of like a spy heist thing where a woman, to get into spoilers here, even though it's only like 5 pages long, or 8 pages, whatever, she is stealing birth control, basically, from this, like, top secret military base. The middle story, however, is absolutely fucked. It's entitled Body Mods, and it takes place in a day spa for all these people who have body modifications.
Yeah, you're just setting in stone why I don't read this, because I can't. Me, on a fundamental level, I personally cannot handle this.
So there's women in there that have breasts that are way larger than possible, asses, you know, I might as well fucking objectify them at this point, that are way larger than necessary.
Basically, some of women being objectified to, like, the most ridiculous standpoint, but it yes. also makes you think about it in the same essence of, hey, we do this still.
Exactly, and they talk about it, too, that, like, one of the women has rough. Fins mm. and is, like, basically a mermaid, and she's like, oh, my fiancé just proposed to me, and he's really into collecting mermaids. And, like, we're gonna have the marriage in my tank, where I live. And at the end of this story...
Talk about a trophy wife.
I know, seriously. At the end of this story, though, there's a panel sequence where the woman is trying to walk to catch the bus, but her feet are basically bound, and they're too small for her to actually run, and she's, like, trying to walk as fast as possible, and she yells at the bus, like, what do you want me to do, run? Like, I can't do... It's absolutely... The whole... thing is just so unbelievably fucked. I was like, if you want a good comic to read that's nice and fun and light, do not read it. If you want something that will make you question your entire life and your entire society and potentially... quite possibly commit suicide, but not quite. Then definitely read this.
Rounding endorsement for a book.
I mean, that's how I live with most anime, but it's not like heavy like that. It's heavy in the fact that I'm just crying because something didn't go right.
Oh, Bitch Planet, especially the triple features, are so heavy, so unbelievably heavy.
Gotcha.
It's literally the heaviest book possible. You pick this up and you fall over. It is so heavy.
Yeah.
All right. Well, Kat, I hope you have something a little more lighthearted for us.
I don't know about lighthearted.
Oh, really? Great.
I mean, it's not awful, but it's kind of like, I mean, it's Batwoman Beyond, so we're still stuck in that woman section. I don't know if I want to talk about women right now. After just looking at some of those panels, and I'm like...
So, it's Batman Beyond number what?
I think it's 12.
Number 12.
Yeah, number 12. So, like, this is an interlude story to what's going on.
And there's women
I haven't
over
read,
the title.
Yeah, it's yeah.
It's a really sweet cover where they actually cross out the Beyond and put Batwoman.
It's
Oh, no, they cross out the man and
put
Batwoman.
Batwoman. It's great. But it's in a place, like, it's even further in the normal future, Batman Beyond, I believe, I think. I haven't read Batman Beyond, so I don't really know, but I'm pretty sure that's what it is. It's, like, it's set in the further future from that. So it's just it sounds like it's a guest team of Vita Alea. I'm sorry if I pronounced her name wrong. Steve Orlando, and then I believe Saya Uma is the one who does our art. So I thought the art was great. It is really pretty. I enjoyed it.
It's gorgeous.
Oh yeah, it's great. I love it. It's got. I always love when comics are more realistic and less cartoony. So this was right
I
up my alley.
I completely disagree. Anyway.
It depends what I'm reading. Right?
I agree and disagree with both of you.
All at the same time.
And
so
we'll leave that at that.
This is like a point in time where it sounds like, you know, Batman and Older and Batman Senior are are off doing something, and this is where you run into her name is, I think it's Nyssa? I believe it's Nyssa. It was a long night last night. I'm very sorry. but you kind of run into a point where she's like, you know, they're in some place called Crown Point, which is now like the blatantly ignored area that need. It's the new bad Gotham, if that makes
sense.
It's
the new Narrows.
Yeah, it's the new Narrows. So, and she's like, you know, people go there to do crime because no one cares. Okay. So, you know, as Neo Gotham is being rebuilt, this place is going to crap, and she's, you know, she's making fun of the fact. She's like, you know, you might see you don't want to fancy that dirty suit coming down here, like just.
Oh, that's funny.
Yeah. So she's like, and you kind of get this be real, Danny. The Batman doesn't even know the point exists. So maybe it is, I don't know. I'm tired. But she's, I mean, you kind of run into Max too. You also run into an older Barbara Gordon as
okay,
a police commissioner. She is a part of this as well. But in the very beginning, you run into Barbara Gordon in a place that she shouldn't be, which is the place that Batman ignores,
yeah.
The point. And she gets captured, so there's a signal that's let off, and Max is the one who starts looking for her, and that's the moment in time where they find Batgirl. Like, she bumps into her trying to find her for help, because they're, of course, you know, blatantly doing drug deals in the middle of nowhere, and she's beating the crap out of them because she wants information, normal Batman style. And that's when she kind of runs into her, and she's like, hey, Gordon needs our help, and trust both of us, come help us. And she's kind of like, I guess. It's not really like we're partners now, and
right.
I can help you. It was, all right, I can help you.
Right.
But, you know, is what it is. I thought it was pretty good. I was a little confused because I don't know Batman Beyond that much, so I know there's probably things that I'm definitely missing in this issue that I probably don't know about because I don't know Batman that well, or Batman Beyond that well. So, I thought it was pretty decent for an interlude. Like I said, I probably should have Wikipedia'd some stuff, but
well, if you enjoyed the story on itself.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, the thing is kind of like at the very end, like, she gets called Batgirl a lot, and half the time I'm like, she's not Batgirl, though. I don't...
Right.
Like, she's not...
She's not sidekicky. She's not...
No, she's off on
a learning curve.
Yeah, she's off on her own, so it made me feel more like, nah, I think she's Batwoman. I think that's what it really comes down to. And if that's one character I would love to see in this universe is a future Batwoman in here, that would be solid. But anyways, side note. But the last thing that she says, maybe you could be, at the very end, she's like, okay, I guess I can help you when you need it, kind of deal, but definitely wants to be more that more solo on
right.
her own. Maybe you could be right, you ask me, and this is like my favorite quote in the entire book, us Batwoman could do just fine.
Nice.
Basically saying that we don't need no man. That's probably
cool.
The best part to that entire issue.
I'm really excited to read that issue. I've been a huge fan of the Batman Beyond book since the Rebirth run, so.
I've heard they're very good, so.
Yeah. Well, cool. We'll stay in the Bat family for a moment, and I'm going to talk about Batman the Shadow,
sure
number 6.
Oh, yeah.
This is the finale. This is the end of the Batman the Shadow crossover. At least the one. Well, this is the one that DC is the primary on, and then the continuation will be Dynamite being the primary.
That's right.
It's
like on.
So, and I'm sorry, but that new creative team, I don't care about at all. When you have the creative team on this one, this is Scott Snyder and Steve Orlando writing, with Riley Rossmo doing the art. So this is...
I'm pretty sure you could snap my legs off and take them, and I'd be like, yeah, I'm cool, just reading this.
So this has been my favorite Batman book every month that it's been released. It's a good thing that it's ending and Batman White Knight is starting next week, so... But this was a fitting end. It has Batman in a super trippy... conversation after his death, talking to basically Cthulhu and like the elder gods, and having a discussion about what Shangri-La is.
I'm really happy I didn't read that.
This is fucking great.
Like reading Batwoman and then going to trippy number two.
It's like watching a kung fu movie mixed with pulp shadow elements. And Riley Rossmo is. He might be my new favorite artist in general, in comics. He has a panel where he dismisses the Joker as part of the story. He basically says to him, "You stay quiet," and does this snake punch to his forehead, and you feel the impact in the illustration.
That is a really cool panel. His hand is
blurred, and there's this like magic pink and yellow energy that is popping, and you literally in your head you hear bumping, like literally feel that impact, and it's just this amazing fight sequence, and you have Batman arguing with gods. It's just like, this is so in the realm of what I love when Batman gets into the weird stuff and has to deal with like the high fantasy elements, things that can't be explained with science, and he's like, no, that doesn't make any sense, you're gonna do this for me instead. And it's just like, it's a total. And this
Cthulhu is over there like, okay.
It's like, I guess. What you're saying, yeah.
But
we can't help you. It's like, well, I don't care. I don't care what you normally would do. This is not the situation that you're in right now. This is not normal by any means, sir. And he basically ultimatums them out into giving him his life back. It's crazy.
Damn.
And then the Joker in this is awesome because he looks like he just got like his ass kicked, got out of the hospital, and started stabbing people, and then left. he's in the white wife beater tank top, which is off from his skin tone. He's got bandages on, and he's been carrying a knife through the entirety, and he's got the buzz cut sides that they gave
him.
He's
like a super sociopath in this comic. I will say
he is. Yeah, it's great. But it goes into the mythology of the Stag, who is a primary villain for the Shadow. It's just an awesome end. And once again, Joker is the brunt of so much violence in this story. He takes a flying knee to the face from Batman, and is the action lines, and this is beautiful, instead of doing action lines, it is the impact point and the circular blood spatter of what would happen to Joker's nose is the action element. So the impact occurs, and you see the head whip and the blood trail. It is.
I think he's still smiling, too.
And he's still smiling because he's a Joker.
He is still smiling, obviously, because he's into that kind of stuff.
Right? This book was just an absolute joy to read, every issue. I love out-of-continuity stuff that feels like it could fit, and the conversations between Batman and Shadow, and Shadow's powers, and Batman saying, no, this stuff isn't really real, but you can learn from me, and maybe I can learn from you. When this comes out in trade, this is an automatic pickup. If you're a fan of either of these two characters, you have to read.
I mean, even in the first issue, I was kind of like slammed into a wall. I was like, what?
Yeah, it's like you get the revelations that totally make sense, even though they may not never be part of real continuity with the characters. Yeah. So, but yeah, my total endorsement. Read Batman the Shadow. Get it in trade when it comes out if you couldn't track the issues down.
So. Interesting. Well, I guess to continue with the Gotham City, at least,
theme
here.
Yeah, we're going to go down that road again, too, with me, so.
Okay, well,
very bat-heavy today.
We have, even though Mother Panic, which is what I'm reviewing right now, issue number 11, written by Jody Hauser with art by Sean Crystal. Sean Crystal, stop doing the art for this book.
Just stop it. Look, we love your art, Sean Crystal. You are miscast on Mother Panic.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. You have an incredible style, very iconic, very interesting.
Great energy.
That should be the Mother Panic artist,
is whoever did the cover.
Yeah, the cover is amazing. Jody Hauser, killing it on writing. Absolutely killing it in the writing department. The art style in this book is way too cartoony for the stuff that it displays. There is a scene here where it's showing people being burned alive. There is a scene in here where it's showing Violet, who is Mother Panic, post-surgery. There is a scene in here with her, this new bad guy, making paintings from blood that she takes out of people's innards and is mixing it on a palette.
This is the same character from the first issue. I've read them. They're great. Anyways, but yeah, I'm pretty sure if you read the trade, I think she shows up like once or twice.
I still actually have yet to read the trade.
One or two issues. I'm pretty sure it's the same character. I haven't read it, but from the looks of it and just kind of the what's going on, I'm pretty sure it's the same character.
Yeah, there's the art style in this does not match the writing. The writing is incredible. It is. And, you know, we get to hear Mother Panic's favorite catchphrase, fuck you, multiple times. She's basically getting drunk. She's like, if Jessica Jones and Batman had a baby.
You know what? He's completely right.
And, like, it grew up with Batman's badassery and Jessica Jones' no fuckery. And
I have never been so on board with that, because he's completely right. It's totally true.
Oh, I should probably say Batwoman, because also it's kind of hinted at that she's potentially a lesbian, or bisexual. Okay, because she's definitely, like, as she is taking down at least 4 shots in this bar, she is talking to 2 different women that are coming up to her, giving no fucks. God damn, I love this book so much. Mother Panic, you are the best character. Yes. And that's my review.
That's awesome. That is fantastic.
I'm still stuck on the fact that he's like, if Jessica Jones and Batman had a baby, I was like, he's right!
Especially Brian Michael Bendis's recent run of Jessica Jones, where she's like so paranoid about everything. She's talking to this, like in the beginning we get an inner monologue where she's talking to, I forget her name on this, balcony, and she's like, all right, what does she want? And then, like, the girl's like, well, why don't you take your, like, mask off so we can talk better? And she's like, okay, that's what she wants. And nothing happens, though. She's just, like, paranoid as shit, gives 0 fucks, and is also Batman.
That's weird. That's like... Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. So that's my review of Mother Panic.
I read the first arc of Mother Panic and loved it, but I fell off the book just because the inconsistencies with the artistic changes, like they keep changing who the artist is.
Like, and that's the thing. Like, that's the one thing I enjoy about the fact that I sit in this middle ground where I can love something for the art and hate the story, but then you can kind of come back and I can hate the art, but the story's so good that I can't stop.
If you can forgive Sean Crystal for his absolutely blasphemous art, and
that is a harsh criticism. He's a good artist. It's just this is DC editorial. Honestly, I think that he's better suited. I would actually like to see his take on the Justice League. To be honest, like,
ooh, that would be really cool.
But I think you need somebody who's a little bit dirtier. Like, somebody a little bit more unkempt on the art. Like, Tommy Lee Edwards in the first arc, almost the stuff looked unfinished, and it worked.
Yeah, no, so, honestly, nice, like, to see something like that, or even, like, a Jeff Lemire style.
Yeah, like, something like broken, something that isn't, yeah, isn't a complete,
I mean,
a little
considering
bit more
that's
abstract.
What the story is, yeah, pretty much, that's a solid, yeah, solid way
lines,
to go.
Where the lines don't connect and the colors bleed through the lines, yeah, and something like that, yeah, like, it could be taken very interestingly. I mean, the chick... sorry. Violet, I can't call her that because she's gonna come kick my ass. she wears like two gauntlets with spikes on them that, yeah, are clear, that she clearly beats the shit out of people with. Like, they are slightly bloodstained. And
you know what? Maybe he would be right for the book too if he just like loosened it up. Like, tries not, yeah, like, it's very, very tight looks, but, yeah. We should move on.
I guess, yeah, sorry. Yeah, all
right,
sorry.
So, I've got, sticking within this bat realm, apparently, because we're not leaving Gotham, like, well, I guess, technically speaking, in this issue, we're not in Gotham, but either way. So
pocket dimensions, yeah, you know, whatever.
Whatever. Yay. Anyways, Batman Detective Comics number 965. Everybody's been leading up to this, it's been leading up to it, and I saw this, and I immediately is like, I've never read any Detective Comics, like, except for whatever random ones Batwoman's been in, but, Tim Drake in the hands of Mr. Oz, and it's like, yay, he's still alive! Of course, everybody at this point is cheering, and it's just like, yay!
Yeah.
Everybody loves Tim Drake, I think.
Yes,
I,
we do, we, okay, love Tim Drake.
Excellent. Just wanted to make sure, I wasn't sure. So the title of it is A Lonely Place of Living, which... kind of, I feel like, sets it up as an interesting take on things. So you have James Tynion, I cannot say your name, I'm sorry, the fourth, I got that, though, as our main writer, and Eddie Barrows as our penciler, and I'd have to say there is, like, one like, most of the art style I liked, but arguably there's, like, one that kind of, I didn't quite, I don't know what it is, I think it might be a little too toothy for me, and, like, one that's just kind of, like, it stopped me for a second and made me think, but this is definitely a story all about Tim Drake, and you're kind of finding out, like, it gives you flashbacks of everything, which I definitely love, because I don't know much, like, I know that Tim Drake is our detective, but I never really knew how he showed up.
Yeah.
And basically, like, his biggest thing was, is it goes into flashbacks, and, like, I love the opening panel, which is basically him approaching Dick Grayson, and is like, I know who you are, you need to help Batman.
Yeah.
Like, that's probably, like, the best part, is, like, he just walks up to him and is like, I know this because of this, this, and this, and I'm just like, you are a little, oh my god. and then you kind of get to the one where I found it weird, but the page before that, like, you're kind of talking about how you have that father figure, like, this is, like, just looking at this panel right here, I feel like I see two proud, like, this page right here, I see two proud fathers, yeah, not just Alfred, like, not looking at him as a brother, he looks like he's looking at him like a son.
Well, and that's Tim.
Yeah, and I know that.
So that relationship.
And that's kind of why I wanted to point that out, is because Tim is definitely more like his son than, yep, he is his brother. And so he's kind of talking, Mr. Oz is basically questioning Tim Drake of why he's doing this, why are you doing this, what is the point of this, what is it helping you?
Yeah.
And he's like, I, why does it matter to you? And, of course, he doesn't know who Mr. Oz is. I'm hoping you all know who Mr. Oz is.
Oh, by now you've been spoiled online.
Oh, yeah, I really hope so, because at this point, like, it's going to be ruined for you one way or the other. He manages normal Tim Drake style, because he's intelligent and great with hacking. He manages to actually hack that area and bust out of the cage that he's been put in and attacks Jor-El. And Jor-El, of course, knocks him off his ass, and he's like... And that's the moment, the reveal for Tim Drake, which I think is a pretty sweet-looking reveal.
Yeah.
And he's like, whoa, 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 who are you? What's going on? Blah, 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 blah. I don't understand. But, I mean, honestly, like, just reading this, like, this is definitely, like, a really, I'm definitely enjoying this Tim Drake story just from the get-go of this. Like, I know, I think I have, like, another 4 or 5 issues with it.
Yeah.
But it's definitely pretty solid. Like, you're gonna, like, he's, basically, the whole reason Jor-El's doing this is, like, I feel like you're like me, and the world is... He's hinting at things that are to come, and he's like, right now someone's not looking, but I want you to understand, like, I can save you, I can help you, because this person isn't looking right now.
Yeah.
So, and, you know, Tim Drake's trying to get back to Batman, and just at the very end, you kind of have this moment where he thinks he sees who he wants to see, but dun-dun-dun, it's not. So I'm going to leave it at that, but I would definitely read it. I definitely found it to be a good story. I like the fact that it caught me up on some stuff. I know with some people, it's not always the most fun, but I definitely enjoyed that. But you get to see...
No, I think...
Yeah. I definitely get to see... I like seeing the fact that it's his perspective, though, because before it was Batman, but this is now his perspective of what really happened.
Just a quick question about this, and I don't know why it took me so long to think about this, but... Would you spend tens of thousands to potentially millions of dollars to have a, like, suspended animation closet, basically? Like, why are the clothes just, like, floating in a cylinder, you know? Like
in the Batcave?
Yeah, in the...
Yeah, I know what you're talking about. I was like, what are you doing?
Yeah, in the panel that you were talking about with...
It's... They're clear statues that they just... take the artistic license to just make them not be there.
Okay, so they're so transparent that you can't even see them from any angle and there's no sheen.
Cool. Yeah, I just do want to point out naturally, one quote,
obviously,
though,
clear mannequins, because Batman's into that kind of stuff.
Exactly.
So, that definitely kind of separates Tim Drake, though, is a hero doesn't need a mask, but it helps.
Yeah.
I definitely... That kind of sets the tone for him right there.
So this is a, weirdly to say, it's 965 is the issue number, right? This is a great jumping on point for Detective Comics.
It's totally true, because I was not lost at all.
And this is an apology letter to fans. That this is exactly what this issue is it's an apology for the mistakes that were made in the New 52 with the character of Tim Drake. This is bringing his origin story back to what it was pre-New 52. They're talking about him being a detective, even figuring out who Batman was, and figuring out who Dick Grayson is. This is one of those stories that I will personally read, despite the art. This is one of the examples of why I don't like realistic artwork.
Really?
It's incredibly boring. You have the weird posing because you're trying to match reality, but I think it's a book that people should read, personally.
I love the art. I was just like all over that. I was like, yes! Yeah.
See, I would rather have Sean Crystal on this book. Like, put Sean Crystal on Detective Comics.
I would probably hate it. I'd be super pissed.
I think it'd be more energetic. I think it feels lifeless to me, is the only problem I have with a detective book, is because of that art style. It just feels boring.
Fair enough. What do you have, Nat? I can see.
All right. I've got Wonder Woman number 31. This has the worst cover art I've ever seen. Brian Hitch, I'm sorry, your prime has passed you. Stop doing stuff with DC. Go back to Marvel. I don't really care anymore.
Or maybe just leave.
People were saying that they don't like him, his writing on Justice League right now. So
they don't, and I can pretty much. It's not okay. It's not great, and it's not even really moot. It's just kind of there.
So this
it
is
exists
a,
because Justice League needs to exist as a comic.
So this is Children of the Gods Part One. Once again, put Sean Crystal on Justice League. Let's do something interesting.
Sean Crystal. Sorry about what I said about you. I swear I don't hate your art. Just for this particular book,
he's just so upset because he wants it to match more to what we're reading, and you would match definitely something. Something else.
So this is the Children of the Gods Part 1. This is a new creative team change, because one of the problems I've had with Wonder Woman since the release of the film is, why the hell haven't you put A-list creators on this book?
I stopped reading Wonder Woman. I read 3 issues of the new stuff, and I was like...
Since Greg Rucka has left the book with his amazing trio of artists that he was using, this book has fell in subscription count, has fell in quality level. And now we have the potential for something that could be really good. So this is written by James Robinson with art by Carlo Paguilan. I'm sorry. He awesome artist. He has a more realistic style, definitely more like image style, I would say, which is kind of interesting. But this centers around Grail, and Grail coming in to attack the Children of Gods. So she's going after Hercules. She's clearly going to go after Wonder Woman at some point, being that she's the daughter of Zeus. But this is a really interesting issue, because this is a reflection of the Wonder Woman film. As you see, Gal Gadot's face is essentially the face prototype that's being used in the book's art. Not on the cover, because once again, the cover's garbage. But I'm sorry, Hitch's art is
horrible right now. But yeah, the interiors, she looks amazing. The book looks like it's moving into an interesting direction. I'm really trepidatious, and I'm trepidatious because the first few issues center on, first few pages center really on Hercules, and I don't want the book to be about other characters. I want the book to be about Wonder Woman. So if that's a prologue piece and truly stays a prologue piece where you focus on 10 pages of a different character, that's fine. But I am concerned that we're going to see a book that focuses too many times on ancillary elements and not on Wonder Woman herself. The reason The Truth and Lies worked was they were a story out of Wonder Woman's head trying to figure things out. It was Wonder Woman's story.
Yeah, I'm just, you know, coming from the fact that I read two or three issues and I've never... I don't think I could be that disappointed that quickly, but...
The two previous ones?
Yeah,
this is the whole team, a new team after that. So this is totally different from...
What'll probably end up happening is I will probably wait for a trade on that just because of...
I would disagree with that on this one. I will pick up Children of the Gods Part 31. This is the first time I've bought a Wonder Woman comic book in 3 or 4 months.
Damn.
So maybe less than that, maybe about 2 months. And I was happy with this issue. I'm still concerned. I need more from issue number 2. And if they have an artist change mid-issues and don't alternate, then I'm going to be pretty upset. But from now, I would say pick up issue 31 with caution.
All right, well, sticking with that Wonder Woman theme, we're going to talk about Bombshells United and how salty and pissed off I am with this comic at the moment. So, as I talked about with Leander the last time on the review was, I'm probably just going to pick this up because the story is, like, a meh, which I don't understand because, like I said, I'm pretty sure it's the same writer as the one that was on Batwoman. So I was kind of confused as to why, like, I think she has a hard time maybe starting up and that might be the issue, but still. So it's Marguerite Bennett and then... getting into the saltiness, apparently there are two chapters in this comic for Bombshells United. In the first chapter, your artist is Marguerite Sauvage. In the second chapter, it's not the same artist, and I legitimately stopped reading halfway through because I was so pissed off. Because the whole reason that I love the Bombshells thing is I love that 50s styles, vintage-looking pinup art of women. And some people I know disagree with me on that because it seems to be objectifying them, but I think at this point this is kind of one of those moments where it's like taking it back and showing you that, no, that's, it's okay. Like, in my opinion, no, this is fine. This is an art style. This is an art about women. So it's not, and even in these, they're not really objectified per se. I mean, there's some things that I would have been like, all right, probably could have skipped out on some of that stuff, but... I mean, I just love the fact that it's got that vintage style look. And then, of course, I got to part 4. They all look like they're 12.
Super weird change.
Even Wonder Woman. Like,
yeah, even though she's, you know, hundreds of years old.
Yeah.
She looks like she is 12.
I don't know, yeah, if there was, like, something that that happened between this, like... I don't know, Paige, after they were talking about, I don't even know her name because I'm so angry, but I went from vintage style, great looking art to, I'm looking at 12-year-olds. I'm pretty sure, like, in most areas, Wonder Woman looks about 30-ish, yeah, 30-ish women, yeah, I'm just pointing that out. But yeah, I hit part 4 and I legitimately stopped reading because I was so frustrated. Like, I can handle an art change from book to book, but I can't handle an art change in the middle of a book. I can't do it. And especially when I went from this, like, awesome penciling to this vintage, from this vintage looking, I would like other people to see this because it's great, to I'm looking at a bunch of 12-year-olds.
As much as Kat loves looking at women, she does not love looking at 12-year-old women.
No, not.
This, yeah.
I don't. I'm angry with this artist change so much. I just
So salty.
I am. I'm so angry.
What happened to us with this, with this episode? Man, we started with the super high with Nightwing New Order, and we like to slowly
went downhill. Just like tearing apart.
I knew it was coming.
Did the switch happen when I talked about Bitch Planet? Are we just on something like super feminist since like.
This is just on like a fundamental level. Like, what the hell?
I don't know. If you're still with us, thanks for listening this long.
We turned into angry elves. We're sorry.
Right? Yeah.
We're normally such optimistic souls.
I know.
We need a little more real Wonder Woman and real Nightwing in our lives, you know?
Leander, if you're listening, this is what happens without you here.
Darkness seeps in.
Let it overtake us.
On that note, on that very high sparkling note, we should probably get out of here. Yeah. So say bye, everyone.
Bye. Read comics.